Well, hello and welcome to our podcast. My name is Mike and I'm here with my brother Dan.
Hello.
And we are talking The West Wing, specifically season one, episode nine. As we continue our watch through season one, we're thrilled that you're with us. Let's go ahead and pull some big ideas off the small screen. This is Rerun Retrospect. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us here at Rerun Retrospect. We're having a lot of fun watching through season one of The West Wing. Episode nine is titled The Shortlist. Just giving you kind of the rundown on it, it aired on the 24th of November, 1999, directed by Bill D'Elia, written by Aaron Sorkin and Patrick Caudill, and the story was by Aaron Sorkin and Dee Dee Myers. Dee Dee Myers was a consultant on the show. She was actually a press secretary a part of the Clinton administration. So she's able to provide some realism to the storyline. So that, and I think that probably comes through on this episode. To bring order to our chaos, we like to break our podcast into segments. One segment that we do when available is the intelligence briefing. We still don't have anything that we can go over there, but we would
love. I think exactly. I'm going to email us at some point.
Yeah, we're going to start having to fake them if it doesn't really pick up. But hey, it is what it is. What are you going to do? I mean, we do this more for just for fun. We don't even really market this thing super heavy, so you know it's hard for people to email what they don't know about. But if you are out there, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at rerunretrospect@gmail.com or tweet us at rerunretrospect. We'd love to get some feedback and interact with you over the West Wing. The next segment is called State of the Union. Dan, why don't you tell us what that's all about?
Well, we're trying to put some context into when the episode actually aired. Which was November 24th, 1999, I think you said, Michael.
That's
so
right.
So let's go ahead and give a shout-out right. to our sister.
That's right, our sister.
It was the day before she was legally allowed to vote.
That's right. It's the day before her 18th birthday.
So we love you, Jennifer.
We love you very much. she's very, very big in the political scene.
I'm sure she's voted ever since right. the next day.
And we can really say whatever we want to because I'm not even sure she listens to the podcast. So this is all happening on
maybe
the download.
Maybe she'll email us. Who knows?
That's right. If you'd like to text her to let her know, her number is 8675309. Anyway, okay, go ahead, Dan.
All right. Another thing, the number one movie was The World Is Not Enough, which was a Bond movie.
Yeah.
It was Pierce Brosnan's third. And
oh, see, I would have guessed it was the next guy. Who is that, Daniel?
Yeah, that would have been two. I mean, he's still doing them. So that would have been 20 plus years from when we recorded this podcast. So yeah, not Daniel Craig. I wonder how many more Pierce Brosnan did after this. He must have done one more. At least. But that's something we could look up. How many Pierce Brosnan Bonds are there? I don't know.
Right.
But that was happening in 1999, the number one movie for that day.
Who's your of all the Bonds, who's your favorite?
I mean, we just lost Connery, what, a year, less yeah. than a year ago? So yeah. let's just say Connery, out of respect.
I don't even think it has to be out of respect. I would say, I mean, I guess as actors, I would definitely say Sean Connery, but if I'm honest, I mean, the Sean Connery as James Bond is well before my time. I mean, growing up and seeing James Bond films, it was always that, is it Roger
Craig? Moore? Was that his last name?
Roger Moore, I think.
I was getting confused with the other one.
So, I mean, that's what I kind of my go-to. But I would say, I mean, as far as esteeming the actor, then 100% it's easily Sean Connery.
Fair enough. One quick thing I know about Moore is he said he stopped doing Bond because the Bond girls never got any older and he was tired of being his age dealing with like a 22-year-old actress. Right, he was like, this is ridiculous.
This is so getting
shout out
creepy.
To him. Nice job, Moore.
Right.
Anyway, I'll go on to read the recap of the episode. This is on IMDb. This was written by Jackson. I'm not sure I'm saying his name right. Corneille.
Yeah, I think it's Jackson Corneille.
And what he wrote for this episode, just to give us a recap here, is when a Supreme Court justice retires, President Bartlet has a golden opportunity to impact the court's composition by nominating a favorite judge, but when further study reveals the candidate's conflicting ideology, the president might change his mind and opt for another judge. In addition, a headline seeking congressman on the House Government Oversight Committee accuses the White House staff substance abuse, a dicey issue for one important member. Pretty good recap. I like he wrote that. I would not have done as good of a job.
No, that's why we use these. That's why we use these, because when we write them, they end up being super long or like four sentences. Four sentences. Hey, the one guy had a problem. The other guy tried to help.
And that's more me. I'm like, you know, the one with the hair.
Okay, so that moves us on to the filibuster, kind of the meat and potatoes of the podcast, where we talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, just what happened in the story. So this one kind of opens up, you know, with Josh and CJ. They're on the phone, and we get another celebratory kind of scene with Josh. Obviously, I've seen the series through a couple of times, and it always surprised me how awkward his arm movements are when he's celebrating. I'm like, I don't know if he's trying to beat his chest or what he's going, but I always watch it going, are you okay, buddy? Do you need to settle
now,
down?
Now I want to go back and watch, because I don't think I noticed that. But it's just kind of like the pickle thing we talked about before.
That's right.
There's something off there, but
right.
Yeah, but I think that makes Josh more likable. Didn't you like him in that scene?
Oh, yeah, because he's
like celebrating, but not being obnoxious about it.
100.
I mean, he's being cute about it.
Right. He's being playful with CJ, you know, kind of trying to diminish what she's done and taking all the credit. But he's definitely doing it kind of tongue in cheek. I don't, you know, there's a good heartedness to the way that he's doing it, not just a blatant, I can't think of the word, just not just a blatant cockiness. So, yeah, I mean,
is that the word you're thinking of?
Well, I don't know. We'll look at the dictionary later. Or the source. And I will say early on, I was gravitating more toward Toby and kind of turning my nose up to Josh. But Josh has turned me around through this first season as they developed the character more. 100% I'm a Josh fan. That's something that I enjoyed in this episode is this is yet another one where we kind of get a little bit of everybody. Doesn't seem like there's anybody left hanging. Except maybe Charlie. I mean, Charlie, again, is the one where we had almost a whole episode dedicated kind of to him. And since then, he's been in the background, not as much in kind of the forefront of the story. What do you think?
No, I agree. I was wanting a little more of Charlie in this episode. He still has that awkward situation with the judge, and he's still just running notes to people in the hallway. So we need more Charlie.
We need more Charlie.
Where is Charlie?
We most definitely need more Charlie. What everybody else, though, I mean, what were your general thoughts about the storylines here in this episode?
I felt like you knew from the beginning they weren't going to go with that first judge.
Oh, sure. I mean, it was very obvious.
That was
obvious.
Pretty transparent, and they did a great job selling the second judge in there.
Mendoza?
Yeah, Mendoza. Also, Toby kind of continues to be comedic relief. Like, we don't learn anything really about Toby. He's kind of just keep adding the comments. I loved his phrase he said to CJ where he said, oh, I'll be very unpleasant to you. That was
right.
In the beginning of the episode. That was funny. I was like, Toby, he's still just comedy right now. I don't want to get too far ahead in the commentation. There's so many things to comment on that happened in this episode. When you said it touched on everybody, like, this wasn't an episode dedicated to one character. This definitely just spread the gambit. So
I would say that makes sense because I think something like selecting a Supreme Court nomination is probably something that is going to dominate all the hallways of the West Wing. Let's break it down to this. We'll do another Mandy check-in. Mandy's, and I'm beginning to kind of understand, I think, my opposition to Mandy as a character, and that's not something that's novel. I mean, there, you know, it's very widespread and understood that Mandy's not liked as a character. If you're familiar with the show, again, that's not something that's unique. But I'm also realizing that she's like always the one arguing with everybody. She's like always, it's very rare for her to be on a team with somebody else. So, and I'm wondering if that's not some of the disdain that we have for Mandy. I mean, part of it is that, you know, she does kind of come off as entitled and, for lack of a better word, just kind of bitchy about a lot of stuff. But
yeah, she's not likable in this episode. Yeah, I mean, she's not a moral compass. She's just trying to get the job done. Doesn't seem to waver when she gets a counter argument. Just is steadfast in what she thinks. So, yeah, I mean, I think her characters continue to be not likable. I'm not a Mandy fan.
No.
I think that's what you were saying. Most people aren't when they watch this, right?
That's correct. You don't see a lot of people pulling, you know, you don't see a lot of people on Team Mandy. You know, obviously, we've talked about how we're going to kind of keep an eye on how that ends up playing out. But I definitely think that, it's not in how it's executed at all. I think the character's written in a way where it's almost like she's almost like an internal antagonist. I mean, you would agree with that? It seems like she's always, number one, she's kind of superficial because she's always dealing with what things look like. But then again, that's her job in kind of dealing with the media and that kind of thing, correct?
Yeah, but she seemed very heartless when she said about the drug tests, like, well, those people know they took drugs, so they'll just resign. And it's just like, oh, this is not a likable person at all.
Right.
She's not weighing the consequence of these people's lives. She's weighing the consequence of what does this look
okay,
like.
Okay, well, if we're going to come down. Well, hold on. If we're going to come down on Sam Seaborn and the screw up because he has to understand that in his job, he just doesn't have the freedom to hang out with hookers. Isn't there a
called common girls? Can we not get that right?
Excuse me. I would, just because we just said that, I'm going to say, you know the scene where the phone rings and Sam's like at the office all by himself and he answers it and he's like, where are you? As soon as somebody gets here, never mind, where are you? I'm coming to get you right now. I totally thought he was going to go rescue another call girl. That's what I
well,
thought that was.
Yeah, you didn't know. I didn't know where that scene was going, but you're right. When he said like a secretary, she'll be here in just a minute, and he realized the urgency, although they twisted that story too, or that plot line very quickly, and like, oh man, Sam really went and handled business there.
Right. If we're going to come down on Sam about not realizing that, he just doesn't have he has to understand the realism that is you're just not allowed to do that. Can we not say that for other employees of the West Wing? Hey, you just can't use illegal drugs and have this kind of job. There's just, you know, that's just kind of the way things are. There's, you know, am I wrong?
No, I see where you're going there. No, and I guess I agree a little bit. But remember, CJ makes the point of there's, I think, what, 1,300 employees.
That's correct.
And the big thing driving this story is there's some congressman or senator who just makes some wild accusation that like a third of them use drugs or drug users, you know.
I think he says illegal drugs too, which is like,
yeah,
I mean,
so there's kind of a
sure
screwball thrown in there. So
I'm not going to say that I agree with Mandy because I agree, she's doing it kind of heartlessly, but there is some validity to what she's saying, just kind of saying that, well, we should just be out in front of this. Obviously, she's speaking completely as a PR person. Any person with a legal understanding knows that, you know, we are protected upon turning evidence over on ourselves, incriminating ourselves and all those kind of things. So I think that's why Josh is as flabbergasted as he is that he has to go around and actually put effort into researching this?
Yeah, but let's put ourselves back in 1999. This is before Facebook was big. And as an educator, know plenty of stories of people losing their jobs because of something that was on Facebook that I guess technically should have been private, but just the perception made them not hireable or not someone who continue in their work. So this is written in 1999, so it's kind of like foreshadowing what actually did happen in real life. Pretty interesting.
Right. I agree with you. It was obvious in the beginning that they were celebrating so much about Harrison being put on the court, you kind of knew this was not going to work. I enjoyed that storyline. The discovery that he'd written this note and that he did not feel like the Constitution expressly said that there's a right to privacy.
But, okay, so when did you realize that Harrison wasn't going to make it? Because for me, it didn't happen until the president gets taken down by the retiring judge. And that's the first time we've seen Bartlett handed himself to him, you know, like, no, like this judge in his conversation just breaks Bartlett down. And Bartlett shows a lot of humility right there, I thought. That's when I knew Harrison wasn't going to make it.
I agree with you that that's the moment. Speaking about Bartlett getting dressed down, I don't know that he showed humility as much as he just kind of showed restraint.
No, I think he showed humility and restraint until the very, very end. And then
And then enough was enough.
A jerk.
Yes. I mean, and I kind of feel like that's a little, I don't know that that would really go down. I don't know that a Supreme Court justice would be that blatantly disrespectful to a sitting president.
Oh, come on. He's an old man retiring. He's like, I've been doing this since you were in college. I think that's exactly how it would go down. Yes. I think it's, yeah, it's entertainment, but
no cares given.
I think at
no
some point given. You got to speak truth to power, right? And I think the judge who's retiring has the opportunity to, and he puts Bartlett completely in his place. I really enjoyed that scene until the end, where one of the few times where I didn't like Bartlett is where Bartlett corrects him and makes him call him doctor or whatever.
It's right. Like, oh. Well, I mean, that's him.
I feel like that was a running theme in this episode, is people in power being condescending.
Was the saying that absolute power corrupts absolutely? So I think condescension, right. Condescension is just kind of an extension of that. No, I agree. It was a very good scene, which kind of, you know, led to, and it is, it's the moment when you realize, okay, Harrison is just not going to be the guy. That gets reinforced to us over and over as Bartlett continues to ask everybody, hey, what about Mendoza? Put some information together for me on Mendoza. And then eventually sets up this showdown that happens with Harrison and Toby and Sam and President Bartlett in the Oval.
All right, so let me cut in there. Sam is one of the best characters in this episode, and I really liked Sam this whole episode. He's not a screw-up in any way in this episode. He is in charge. He knows what he's doing. He does exactly what his job is. This, to me, if you had to pick a character in an episode where they kind of showed off everybody, Sam was the star in this one.
Okay.
Are you a little surprised I think that?
Yeah, I think you should wear a bell around your neck. You know that? Because I did not see this coming at all. This came out of nowhere. I agree with you. I think they've tried to tell us throughout the first season, Sam is really, really smart. He's extremely intelligent. And that kind of that gets shown off in this episode, specifically when he has his little debate in the Oval with Harrison that we were just talking about. And I agree with you; it's very good. The whole dissertation about you know what decade, what were the big overriding issues of the courts through the decades, whether it was civil rights or, you know, how privacy was going to dominate the beginning of this millennium and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's just, it's good dialogue. It's very, it shows kind of a depth to Sam that we haven't seen. And it's great to see him not doing it while he's making these huge PR blunders and things that are just kind of, right. That, you know, any rational person would be like, what are you doing? So, you know, this episode has put Sam in a very, very good light. I'm not saying you're fully turned around on him or anything like that, but I knew at some point you were going to start to feel a little bit of the Sam Seaborn love.
There's still going to be some disastrous end to Sam. I believe that.
You do. You just complete crash and burn.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's like a Game of Thrones type thing. It's like something's going to happen where it's just not foreseen at all. And it's based on him being intelligent and not really liking the way things are, but
right.
Working his way around living in that life. So anyway,
well, your fortune cookie wisdom notwithstanding, we will keep an eye on Sam and for the inevitable crash and burn that Dan thinks is going to happen to him. And so hopefully, you know, obviously the series goes on.
I mean,
on
it's just good television. They've got to take Sam down, right?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't open a whole series with him meeting a call girl and then not eventually just have him flop. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I mean, I'll see what happens. You know what happens. I'm interested. That's just what my guess is.
Right. I do want to bring up, and this is just real quick. I don't know how much discussion we'll have. We had another overly dramatic CSI moment with Josh, which, if I'm honest, is endearing to him because he is passionate. When he goes in and he confronts Leo and we find out that there were pills involved and that he did go through treatment and all that kind of stuff, when he goes to leave and he looks back at him and he's like, no, I'm not going to let this fraction of a man take you down. I won't permit
it. Well, I think this is something we should talk about because I have it written down here. I didn't see Leo being the problem. I didn't see it in the episode. It wasn't until Josh had the conversation with him. And maybe I'm just a bad viewer, bad at predicting. I don't know. But they did paint the picture, right? They even did it in the recap of former episodes, they show him going into the AA meeting. Right. I didn't know Leo was going to be the big issue. And apparently it's pills. So let me bring this to you, Michael. Leo, recovering alcoholic, apparently had some sort of illegal pill problem. But he came home late one night after work and his wife divorces him. That was the final straw. He brings her pearls and has a violinist, but the pills. Kind of,
you know that ends up, it just ends up weird after a while because there's a strange guy in your dining room.
So we're seeing a lot about Leo. Leo's, he's got the most trust of anybody as far as Bartlett goes, right? Bartlett trusts him more than anyone else.
100%. 100%.
I mean, he says to Bartlett, or he says to Leo, did you have a drink yesterday? Did you have a drink today? And he's like, no, sir, no, sir. He's like, that's all I need to know, and we're going to fight this battle and get through it. But I just bring back, I just bring that up because that was one of the episodes I really didn't like. So I just thought.
It seems a little superficial that they've been through addiction recovery and all that kind of stuff. And now, you know, again, you keep saying I understand this, but I mean, this was a culmination. This wasn't, oh my gosh, you've come home one time late. You've come late one time. I'm divorcing you.
Of course.
Right?
Fair enough.
This was something that is built up. Maybe after you go through addiction recovery, there's not a whole lot left to be put on that camel's back before it, you know, it all comes crashing down. But you know, I do think we do get to see a lot more of Leo. I did feel like he's a little naive there in, you know, he's like, and I guess that's just the bias of someone trying to protect themselves. But the fact that he's so surprised when Josh looks at him and says he's got it, I mean, it feels almost, I mean, the puzzle pieces are falling into place, and you kind of understand that Lillian Field, once you understand Leo had used drugs in the past, now the whole Lillian Field thing is just wide open, and there's just I guess the light comes on with what's really happening there. Maybe I'm being hard on Leo. It seems like he's just flabbergasted that, oh my gosh, how could they know about that? And you're like, are you kidding me in today's world? I don't know.
Well, in 1999's world. But that's kind of something I hadn't thought about, is this episode talks so much about not criticizing, was it Harrison? Not criticizing something he had written when he was 26. Like, don't judge somebody by the mistakes they made in their youth or whatever. But the pill and the alcohol problem, I think they said in the episode, was 6 years ago. Yeah. Does that make a difference, whether it was 6 years ago or whether it was when someone was 26?
It's interesting to me that something from your past can be brought up and it's held against you like you did it last night. And like, there's never, and I'm not saying, listen, there are times when you're going to find out something about somebody's past and it's not something that they've grown from or changed or whatever, but it's almost like there's never a benefit of the doubt of, in the episode, they bring Harrison in and say, we need to talk about this and get clarity. That's something the public doesn't do, right? The public finds out you wrote something 26 years ago. Well, then we fully believe right now that you still hold that belief. And nobody ever goes, well, wait a minute, that was 26 years ago. What do you think now? You're older, you're wiser, you have more experience just in life. Sometimes people are going to have the wrong answer and they're like, yeah, I still believe whatever this thing that we've discovered in their past is or whatever. But, you know, same thing with Leo. He's recovering. So why is it that we get to hold him hostage to this drug use? It's not like he's an active drug user right now. This is something that he had a problem with. He recognized it was a problem and he got the treatment.
But we're cheering for Leo at this point, right? Leo has this moment with Josh where Josh says, hey, we've got a problem. And Josh doesn't know for sure. He goes to Leo to confirm that there was, they say just pills. I don't know what pills were going on in 1999, but... Or 6 years before that.
Right. Well, I mean, just whatever the assumption is, some kind of pain pill or, you know, some kind of habit forming, whatever. You know, I think whatever it is, you know, is irrelevant other than the fact that it was illegal. He wasn't supposed to be using them and he was abusing them.
Yeah. And this congressman has painted the whole White House staff with this big brush. But, you know, like I said before, I didn't see that Leo was going to be the problem. It makes you like Leo more, I think. And I mean, we'll see what happens. I don't know what's going to happen with the story.
You can tell they're setting it up. This is going to be a big arc of season one. I think that's obvious here. This is not something that is just going to fade off into Mandyville. It's going to actually be something.
All right. Going back to my point about being condescending, the judge, when he was talking to Sam, the one Harrison who didn't get picked, saying, I do this for a living. Did you just not like this judge the whole time? Even though his thing was 26 years ago, or no, I'm sorry, when he was 26, there's nothing likable about this guy.
I really don't dislike him. I don't necessarily agree with him, but I think they're just having a debate about the law up until the point where he's just like, I'm not accustomed to being talked to this way. Once he gets all haughty like that and all that kind of stuff, I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of done with you, dude. Especially he's a judge. I mean, for a living, you hear and weigh in on debate and argument. And
you decide, right?
I mean, sure. But before he was a judge, he was a lawyer, and he was, you know, this is what they do for a living. They argue. He was making an argument. That's a quote from A Few Good Men. You know, that, and the fact that they're going back and forth about this, and he's so offended that, you know, somebody is actually challenging or taking the opposite view, that's totally contrary to what his profession is. So, yeah, I agree with you. I absolutely don't like it. And it's funny because they were so excited about Harrison. And it makes the line that Josh says to Toby in the hallway when he goes, at what point did we decide Harrison was our guy or our choice or however he said it? Their choice was not so much conviction-based or passion-based.
It was that he could get 90 votes, right, from the Senate.
Absolutely, it's politically, but you know, they were like, oh, this is good. I mean, Bartlett says that walking into the West Wing from the portico. He's like, this is exactly what we need. We need a big win because it's going to look good on the news and it's going to help our, you know, our job approval rating.
Well, he's already been told, Bartlett's already been told that he's going to lose by the retiring judge, which was pretty impressive. The judge says Republicans have conviction or
guts and voters. He says Republicans have guts and voters like that.
And the judge claims that he's not even a Democrat, which we go back to. This isn't a political podcast, but we go back to, it's still fun to, you know, watch this.
What do you mean he's not a Democrat? That Bartlett's not a Democrat?
That's what the judge says to him. He's like, I wanted to retire 5 years ago. And I didn't because a Republican was there, right?
Right. And I wanted a Democrat, and instead
I got you.
Right. But
that's a great line. And
it is.
Like I said, we're not a political podcast, but that is such a fun thing to watch, that contrast, and have Bartlett deal with being told this by someone who's, you know, lived his life and he's ready to ride off into the sunset. He wanted to ride off into the sunset 5 years ago. So
right. This was the first time, I think, in the series that they nailed down exactly where we were in the timeline of the administration.
Yeah. They did.
Yeah.
They did.
And so that was good to, you know, like I say, I think talking about it earlier wasn't necessarily a spoiler, but I did notice that once he said it, I was like, okay, here's the moment when we realize we're 1 year into this first term. We're still getting a lot of this CJ Danny kind of flirtatious thing going on.
Yeah, I don't know whether to like Danny for being so persistent or to be like, Danny, just stop. I mean, like, she's made her point. She can't date you because of her position. And maybe in the future when she doesn't have that position anymore. But it can't happen right now. I did think I saw the goldfish thing happening, though. I was like, when Josh walks away and he says she can't get enough of them, I'm like, what? CJ's not in her apartment with all these goldfish bowls around her.
Okay. She's wait. She's also not nine. All right? What adult, right? That's like me going, you know what I'm crazy about? Fruit roll-ups. Really? How old are you?
I love marshmallows.
She's crazy about goldfish? Does she eat dry Cheerios off of a tray?
I mean, but yeah, that was a well-written thing, and the way she responds is great. You know, everyone would appreciate that. Everyone's cheering for Danny. Danny, even when he deals with Josh, he's like, I have to print whatever you tell me.
Right.
Like, there's nothing not to like about Danny. Danny's kind of like Charlie, right? It's just, everyone likes him.
I agree.
Nothing not to like about him.
I agree. I really like, you know, again, I'm not trying to, we're rubber stamping a lot of stuff. There's not a, other than the fact that you just thought, you know, this, I think it's very strange for for an adult with that, you know, to be like, I'm crazy about Goldfish the Crackers. That's just...
If he brought her, and these didn't exist in 1999, flavor blasted Goldfish and just said, hey, I brought you a snack because Josh told me. And that's that's right. The other thing. He immediately says, Josh told me. He wasn't like, oh, I noticed that you like Goldfish. I don't know. I thought it was well written. It was fun to watch.
I guess what took me back is she's like, you know the crackers you have at parties? I'm like, what parties are you going to where here in the buffet you see Goldfish? I'm like, right next to the Teddy Grahams?
Ooh, a dipping sauce. It's just...
chocolate frosting. Okay. No, but I agree. I'm pulling for Danny. I think he's being persistent, but I think it's a measured persistence. I don't think it's over the top. He likes to land his little comments or whatever, and then he goes about doing his job.
Yeah, fair enough.
So anyway, no, I do. I enjoy that storyline very, very much. So no, I mean, like I said, I think this was a good episode. There are two points of contention that I have with it overall. Where's Charlie? You know, I wish. Granted, Charlie's new in his job, and maybe there's something to be said for the fact that he's, you know, he's still kind of learning, and that's why he's in the background and just kind of carrying notes around.
Well, you said Charlie, but the one big point was the judge recognized him from being a
caddy
working at the golf course.
Yeah,
that was like dropped off immediately. I didn't really see where that was going. Like Charlie just kind of accepts that the judge didn't really know him and walks away, doesn't really care. Obviously, I think Charlie's going to have some big episode coming up, right? I mean, it's got to happen. What was your other point about this episode? Sorry.
Just Mandy. She's just annoying.
Okay. So you bring up Mandy. So what is Josh's secretary's name?
Donna.
All right. So you said ship.
Yes.
Like that's something.
Yes.
This is the only time I thought Donna. I was like, Donna's going to outgun Mandy here. Like, Josh gets drunk in her apartment and yells at her roommate's cats. That's what happens between Josh and Donna. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know that. Yeah. I'm telling you.
So you feel like you're feeling
maybe
like...
Mandy fades out here. Donna, I mean, Josh has to take another job. He can't be her superior and like they have a ship or whatever. But Donna was in this episode so much. She was in it so much. She's really likable. They have the whole falling of the ceiling thing that goes on. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. But I've backed off of thinking Donna is the younger sister, the older sister, whatever type of relationship she has with Josh. Donna's pretty cool. She's like Charlie. She needs a little more airtime.
She needs a little more airtime. Okay, so you felt like this interaction with Josh and Donna was flirtatious. It was not sibling-esque.
I won't go that far, but there's nothing redeeming about Mandy right now. You kind of just want Mandy to go away. So
you kind of just want Mandy to go away. I understand.
All I can think is Josh is like, Donna, hey, I'm going to come by again and yell at some cats. I don't know.
How do you feel about Sam Seaborn and Mandy getting together? Is that a possibility? You see what I did there? I tried to trick you into liking something else about Sam. It's just what I do. Obviously, that's not going to happen. We know Sam is going to Sam has to find the sex worker to be interested in him. That's what he does.
No, he could have find Leo's daughter. I mean, well, we don't know what's going on with that.
That's true. So that's true.
The final thing I have is when the congressman is making the accusation that all the people are on drugs at the White House, they have CND. At the bottom of the screen on the television with I think a tube.
Yeah, there are no.
What do you think
screen.
The D stands for? I mean, you know they're trying to copy CNN, but what does the D stand for? I could think of like three letters I would have picked before D.
Yeah, like CNT, like cable news. Obviously, it's cable news, and then.
Oh, what is it? Obviously, you obviously know it. I don't know what it is.
Well, no, I'm saying the D? C. I don't know. Cable news department. I mean, is it a government run? You know, I mean,
distribution. I don't know. Yeah. But like you said, T would have been better. Cable news television.
Cable. See, M. You could have said cable news media. I think that probably could have worked.
Exactly. Why did they go with D? I can't think of the best.
I don't know. I don't. But you think Aaron Sorkin's deciding what the little, you know, the little bug on the television thing is? I mean, I'm sure.
Well, I think Aaron Sorkin, is good that he found writing television instead of writing like knockoff serials, because they would have been really bad.
I don't know. He's obviously going to parties where they highlight goldfish as one of the things. Hey, hey, come over to my house. We're going to hang out, listen to music, and then, hey, there'll be some goldfish.
There's more where that came from.
That's like, right. We've got the cheddar and the pizza. You got anything else you want for the filibuster there, Dan?
No, no, I'm good. I'm set.
All right, well, slide us into our next segment, which is the caucus.
Well, Michael, I am going to rate this. This is where we rate the show. Yay, nay, or abstain. I'm definitely going yay on this one. This was a great episode. It was very fun to watch. All the plot lines were entertaining. There's nothing bad to say for me about this episode. To me, I'd put it in the top three of the episodes I've seen so far.
Okay. What's your absolute favorite episode so far?
I have no idea. I haven't really thought about it, but I do know that this one would be in the top three. I know you're going yay.
I am going yay. I mean, you know, and again, I know you don't like the fact that I'm kind of rubber stamped through here, and I think on our last episode was the first time
you showed some integrity the last episode when you went abstain. Right. So.
But I'm going to be transparent. I really enjoy season one. I'm not going to lie to you either. Season two is a good, you know, I think is a very good season of television. Obviously, if I've watched this series a couple times through, then it's no wonder that it's something that I'm fond of. I think, you know, we just do this to kind of, you know, it's kind of a cool little segment, but it also gives a chance for you to kind of weigh in as a first-time viewer. I don't think anybody's going to be surprised, even if I, you know, and eventually there is going to be an episode that I vote nay. I have no doubt. But nobody's really going to care. What, you know, the interesting part of this segment is, as a new watcher, you know, what are you as a new watcher feeling about the series and about the episode we're talking about? Okay, good stuff. Moves us to our final segment of the podcast, which is on the record. Through this podcast, I've been trying to insert quotes from the episode we're discussing into our normal conversation. And Dan is trying to catch when I do that. Sometimes I'm able to pull it off. Sometimes it's extremely awkward. It just is what it is. I'm going to let you know right now, Dan, I got three quotes in. That's what I was able to do this episode. How'd you do on catching them?
I definitely caught one. I might have caught two. And if I'm really lucky, I caught three.
Okay.
I don't think I caught three. I definitely got the bell around the neck.
Yes.
That was a great line about, I think Leo says it, right? Leo says it to CJ?
He does. When they're having that little meeting about what Lillianfield says, and CJ comes up behind him, he says that you should wear a bell around your neck. You know that?
And then this is the one, fortune cookie? You said something about a fortune cookie.
Well, your fortune cookie wisdom notwithstanding. Josh says that to Donna. I just wanted to include one of those little quips that happened between Josh and Donna, because you're right. Their whole interaction this episode was very, it was fun to watch. It was a lot of fun to watch. No matter what ships you're pulling for.
Right. And then, I don't have the third one. You said something about liking Sam, and I felt like you put a quote in there, but
I did. That is where I did. And I did kind of shoehorn it. It didn't go as well as I wanted, but the quote is, "See what I did there? I tried to trick you." And this is when Danny was talking to CJ, and he's trying to get somebody to acknowledge the fact that they had decided on Harrison. And he kept all that. And so I kind of liked how he was pulling that off and how he was blatantly letting him know that he was, you know, trying to do that. So that I just included that quote. I thought it was still pretty good.
Was there a quote or two you didn't get in that you wanted to?
I was gonna see if I could find a way to do "I won't permit it," but then we ended up kind of talking about how dramatic that scene was, so I didn't use that.
Right.
I think there was kind of good comedy going on with the whole in the beginning when they talk about who to man and all that kind of stuff. So at some point I was thinking if I was gonna take one of our agreements that we tend to have a lot with this series and say, on this one, we like to think of ourselves collectively as the men, but then that just kind of, it just felt weird. And then I did like Toby's line when he's talking to Josh in the hallway where he goes, "Number one, I don't report to you. So if you called me to task on anything, I was going to do that, but you didn't." But I like those lines. I thought they were pretty good.
Yeah, Toby continues to be the comic relief. We're seeing that.
Well, I think he's more than I agree with you. He definitely brings the humor, but I don't think he's like a one. I don't think he's like a. I think there's still substance to Toby in the storylines, and how convicted he is to get Harrison on the court, and then how he turns around on that. I don't know. Maybe I'm being oversensitive, but I don't know that I would classify Toby as just the comic relief.
We'll see what happens with Toby. Oh, Toby, Toby, Toby.
Toby, 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 Toby. All right, good stuff. That's that was The West Wing Season 1, Episode 9, titled The Shortlist. We're still having a lot of fun. Hopefully you'll watch Episode 10 of Season 1 before you listen to our next podcast, which will be our podcast released on Tuesdays. We hope that you'll just continue through as we take this ride and we continue to prove that hindsight is not always 2020. This is Rerun Retrospect.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Rerun Retrospect. If you'd like to connect with us, you may email us at rerunretrospect@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @rerunretrospect. We hope you'll join us for our next episode where we keep pulling big ideas off the small screen.